This week we will be studying Proverbs chapter 4. This is a continuation of Solomon's opening discourse on wisdom, which we have studied for the past few weeks. This week Solomon emphasizes the multi-generational nature of these teachings. They are not just his words, but the words which were passed on to him by his father. The passage also contains similar exhortations to get wisdom and the benefits of having wisdom. These exhortations are similar to things which we have read in the last few weeks. The passage for consideration is Proverbs 4, and if you have not read it yet, now is an excellent time to pause and do so. The chapter opens with, "Hear, O sons," words which we often find as a divider of sections in these opening pages of Proverbs. In fact, we find similar dividers in this chapter at verse 10 and verse 20. The first division of the chapter is most unique in my mind because it records David's advice to Solomon. First, as is common, Solomon exhorts his listeners to hear his fatherly instruction and to be attentive to it. We hear that repeated many times throughout the Proverbs because I am sure many people will neglect to listen to what Solomon says. We all have our pride, and often we think that we know better. We are wrong. We should humbly listen to the Scriptures and apply them. Solomon said that if one would only listen to his precepts attentively, then he would gain insight, because these are good teachings. From there, he moves on to discussing how he had learned these precepts from his father, that is, David. For those who may have started listening here in the book of Proverbs and who don't have the context, David had been king of Israel before Solomon. He had risen up from being a shepherd boy to being a military commander, and then, having been falsely accused, he became a fugitive until his accuser, King Saul, died, at which point he assumed the throne. At the time when he took the throne, Israel was racked by attacks from external enemies and also internal strife. They were, at that time, never more than a few battles away from slavery. But David won the wars, and he built a small empire for Solomon over which he ruled and amassed enormous wealth. This gave Solomon rule over peaceful and prosperous times in which he could deeply contemplate the wisdom which we are now studying. It may come as a surprise to us that David had spent much time teaching Solomon about wisdom. We have noted before that the indications from the historical record are that David was somewhat hands-off in his parenting. David had been a man of war. He spent much of his life out on the battlefield, and even when he was old, he devoted his energies to managing an empire. It is reasonable to think that someone with his job description would have limited time to spend training up his family. And of course, the family which David had was larger than normal. You will recall that he had many wives, and that as a consequence, he also had many sons, at least 25 of them. See 1 Chronicles 3 and our message, David, King of All Israel, for that. It's impossible to divide an already limited amount of time and attention between too many people, and to give them all as much time and attention as they might need. David's sons were not known for their wisdom and good behavior. In fact, they were known for the opposite, which is what we might expect from young men who receive little parental input and have at their disposal great wealth, power, and privilege. His eldest son Amnon is best known for having raped his own sister Tamar. You can read about that in 2 Samuel chapter 13. David's son Absalom is then best known for having murdered Amnon and then running a coup against David. Absalom was killed in battle at some point not long thereafter. Another of Solomon's brothers, Adonijah, also attempted to seize the throne when David was on his deathbed. The scriptures in 1 Kings 1:6 attribute Adonijah's bad behavior to the fact that, quote, "his father had never at any time displeased him by asking, 'Why have you done thus and so?'" end quote. A statement like that doesn't tend to make us think that David should have been considered father of the year. 1 Chronicles 27:32 tells us that David's uncle Jonathan and Jehiel, the son of Hachmonai, attended the king's sons. That could suggest to us that while David was busy running the empire, they were the ones providing fatherly guidance. We also might question whether David was to be counted as a particularly wise man himself. We note in the opening section of Proverbs that Solomon has described for us repeatedly how foolish adultery is, so much so that we take it that adultery is perhaps the most foolish thing a man can do, and yet it is something that David did. Solomon was the son of David's adultery with Bathsheba. I suppose that Solomon grew up seeing right in front of his eyes just how foolish and destructive that adultery had been, and no doubt David told Solomon just how bad that decision was, perhaps heavily influencing Solomon's opinion on the matter. But David's weaknesses as a man and father aside, he apparently did take more time preparing Solomon to succeed him as king, and that included giving him wise advice that he had to give. David started this work when Solomon was young and continued his work preparing Solomon for the throne and preparing the throne for Solomon throughout his life, as we all should give preparations to our children. As we noted when we studied the end of David's life, he devoted much effort into giving Solomon the things he needed to build the temple, which took a large portion of Solomon's reign. Surely, David prepared Solomon in other ways as well. The advice of David are words which we should heed. David had failings, as we all do, but he certainly did something right in life to attain to the position that he did. And when he had failings, he did repent of them and learn from them. So what did David tell Solomon? Primarily, he told him that he ought to get wisdom. In fact, in chapter 4, verse 7, we have it recorded that the beginning of wisdom is this: get wisdom. What we have read previously, see chapter 1, verse 7, that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Those two might seem to contradict, but I am sure they hold hands. It is maybe a chicken and egg question. Do we fear the Lord and thus seek to attain wisdom? Or do we seek to attain wisdom and thus we would fear the Lord? Both are true, I suppose. The point, though, is this: wisdom isn't just going to fall into your lap, and you need it as a preliminary. You aren't going to have it if you won't do anything to go out and get it, and you aren't going to keep it if you don't treasure it, and if you don't get it and you don't keep it, then you won't get the benefits that it brings. So we must recognize the value of wisdom. We must prioritize it, and we must seek it out and guard it, or else we won't have it, and we won't have its benefits, and as we have said many times, those are good benefits such that we should very much want it. Wisdom is a good investment to make up front. And so David told Solomon that he should get wisdom, that he should not forget it, that he should love it and not forsake it, and that he should prioritize wisdom highly. Whatever you get, David said, get insight. Surely wisdom would be better for Solomon than all the riches in the world. Solomon's riches would not give him wisdom, but Solomon's wisdom would get him riches. If Solomon would only seek wisdom and keep the commandments David taught him, then wisdom would bestow him with a beautiful crown, and indeed, Lady Wisdom did for him just that. Solomon broke the quote with a new section, "Hear, my son," adding that the wisdom which he teaches us will bring us long life. Indeed, Solomon stated metaphorically that wisdom is our life itself. A man without wisdom, we know, is more likely to make the wrong decisions and to face calamity and death, but the wise man is more likely to make the right decisions and live. Solomon said his wisdom would lead us down the right paths in life, that we should walk and run without stumbling, that is, living our lives with as few burdens and problems as possible. This is a path of light that grows brighter and brighter so that we can see all obstacles. Through Solomon's wisdom, this good path is available to us. The alternative is to walk down the path of wickedness. This path, a path of wrongdoing and violence, is a path of deep darkness in which one does not see the pitfalls and stumbles directly into them. Wickedness brings suffering on those who practice it. In the final 8 verses of the chapter, yet again demarked by the words, "My son," Solomon repeated similar exhortations to those given thus far. He urged us to be attentive to wisdom and to diligently keep it. He told us that we should not let it escape, as if it were an animal that would run away from us unless we do our fastest running to catch it and build our best traps to hold it. It is worthwhile for us to put such efforts into keeping wisdom because, as has been noted, wisdom will be both life and healing for us. Solomon urged us in verse 23 that we should keep our hearts with all vigilance. Now, in ancient times, the heart was the symbol of the man himself. It was reckoned as the seat of reason and knowledge. This is poetic and not biologically accurate, of course. Today, we would be more biologically accurate by reckoning the brain as the seat of human knowledge. Solomon's point, though, was that we should keep our minds focused on wisdom, because if we would do so, our minds would be for us a spring of life. Solomon urged us then to put away other things, like crooked and devious talk, to focus not on such lies, but instead on finding the truth. He said that we should stay on the path of wisdom, looking straight ahead and swerving, not to the right or to the left. This is the good path. And so my conclusory exhortation to you is the same. We all want to live our best lives. We want to be prosperous, healthy, wealthy, socially well-adjusted, and so forth. Wisdom will put us on the path to attaining and being those good things. Wisdom is a good investment, but wisdom comes at a price. To have wisdom, we must be diligent in our studies and in our efforts to keep wisdom. Let us then put forth that effort to have wisdom and to gain its benefits.
For those of you who are listening to this message away from your computer and are looking for more like it, you can find us at eastjordan.church.